You're tuned to The Weekend, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sines, your host for The Weekend. And joining us today is Jamie Flores. Jamie is the Program and Education Director for the El Paso Holocaust Museum and Study Center. Jamie, thank you so much for being with us here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's been a while since you've joined us, so we want to brush up a little bit in case our listeners don't know much about the Study Center. If you wouldn't mind telling us a little bit about the history of the Holocaust Museum and Study Center and just kind of guide us through to some of the things that people can see.
Of course. We were started in 1984 by a Holocaust survivor, Henry Kellen, who passed away just a few years ago, shortly before he turned 99. And it really was his life's work after the Holocaust to educate the El Paso community about the events of the Holocaust in hopes that it would not happen again, to have a more peaceful future. And so that's what we do at the museum, is we educate about the Holocaust. We talk about the lessons of man's inhumanity to man. We do that also through our programming, but primarily through our permanent exhibit. Our galleries feature artifacts, photographs, films that chronicle the Holocaust from before it began, with Jewish life in Europe before, all the way through liberation, ending with a special memorial room in honor of our survivors.
It's interesting the fact that a couple of weeks ago there was a professor here, Deborah Lipstadt, who talked about, you know, denial and the fact that there are so many people out there who still insist that this never happened, yet you know, there are museums, study centers, tons of books and survivors. And it's interesting how some people just deny history.
Absolutely. Or try to revise it, is what the term is that these so-called historians are using now, is revising history. And it's interesting and also very scary that people can deny this entire chapter of history, these millions of lives that were lost or destroyed. And that's why we continue to have these museums, because they're so necessary.
As far as the museum goes, have you always been at that location right now? Or were you before by the El Paso Jewish
We were. We Academy? Were actually part of the Jewish Community Center on Wallenberg. It started out actually as a one-room display that Mr. Kellen kind of took over and began to take over the space of the Jewish Community Center because of his passion for this. And so it turned into its first freestanding museum in the early 90s next to the Jewish Community Center. Unfortunately, that building did burn down in 2001. So our current location downtown opened in 2008 after an amazing capital campaign by the El Paso community to restart the museum.
When the building burned down, I think you all were either that week or shortly after, we're hosting a dinner, and President Clinton was here, correct?
Yes, it was at the same time. He actually toured the wreckage of the burned out museum. So the timing of that was very interesting and very sad, but he was able to see what we were doing here in El Paso, and that alone, that he was here, was a very big deal.
You all hosted a lot of big-name speakers like President Clinton to raise money for this museum and for other events, and it's incredible just how many people came out to support and how much money you all raised.
Oh, absolutely. And the national support that our very small museum received from these big name speakers really was incredible and helped put us on the map and to get us to where we are today. And our focus has shifted somewhat so that we do focus more on bringing in Holocaust scholars, like we partnered to bring in Deborah Lipstadt. So that's been more of our focus lately than some of these larger name speakers, but they really did a lot to put us on the map.
We'll talk a little bit more about the museum in just a minute, but as I mentioned, you all are always involved in different events here in the community, and you have one coming up, a big one, and it's free to the public, but reservations are encouraged. If you wouldn't mind telling us about that, Jamie.
Absolutely. We are very excited about this event. It's called Community Encounters, No Ordinary Words. It is the second event that we've done like this, and it is very unique for us. It is primarily dinner and conversation. We are inviting participants from all over El Paso, from all different backgrounds, religious backgrounds, ethnicities, to come and share a meal with us and to talk, basically, to have their voice heard, to have their story and their perspective heard on the very important topic of words. The focus primarily is on stereotypes and how they really affect all of us and affect our society as a whole because of the divisions that stereotypes cause and the fact that we're seeing almost an upsurge of racism, anti-Semitism, and divisions across the board in our country and even in our community. Even El Paso is touched by that. So this is our response to that. In the last year or so, particularly in the election season, we experienced a lot at the museum, this feeling of anger, of fear, of not feeling heard, of just discontent. And so we thought a lot about how can we address that. Our focus is always on Holocaust history, but we also see that there are ramifications from that to today, that there are these really amazing ties from history to what's going on today. And we're seeing more and more of that in even in our community. So our response to people's feelings to what they were expressing to us at the museum was to start these dinners because we felt that this was a way to build some bridges in our community. And we kept going back to the very famous quote by Martin Luther King Jr. He said, "People fail to get along because they fear each other. They fear each other because they don't know each other. They don't know each other because they have not communicated with each other." And so we felt this was an opportunity to have communication. The format is very casual. We have five people sitting at a table with a facilitator to help guide the conversation. The seating is all lottery style, so people are sitting with others they don't know, maybe have never met before, are from very different backgrounds, and they are given a few prompts to start the conversation, and then they just talk to each other. The first event that we had like this was really incredible. We didn't know what was going to come out of it. It was really going out on a limb for us to do something like this. And the conversations were so rich as people really talked to one another about similar backgrounds or similar stories and really celebrated each other's differences as well.
Can you give us perhaps a sample or an idea of what one of those prompts may be from last year, perhaps?
Okay. Well, one of the things that we're talking about for this one, I can tell you because they're fresh in my memory, is we are asking, what are the sources of stereotypes? Where do they come from? How do they personally affect you? Or what is a stereotype that you feel personally affected by? And we're keeping it pretty broad because we want our participants to feel free to talk about gender stereotypes or generation stereotypes, race stereotypes, things about their religious beliefs that they have felt are part of a stereotype. So we're keeping that part of it pretty broad, and our facilitator's job is to help guide that conversation and make sure everyone at the table has a chance to be heard and to hear from others.
As you mentioned, stereotypes can sometimes just affect a relationship very much. And, you know, for the benefit of our listeners as well, they might be out there wondering, well, who are the facilitators? And they might already be forming stereotypes in their heads. So if you wouldn't mind telling us, how were the facilitators selected? And people might want to know, are they community leaders? Are they ordinary people like you and I? Or perhaps, you know, we're not ordinary people, might say, because you're on the radio. But tell us a little bit about who the facilitators are and how that's going to work as far as the setting up with the tables.
Of course. Because we want a really diverse participation at the event, we try to make our facilitators diverse as well. We've partnered with different organizations here in El Paso, Temple Mount Sinai, the YWCA Racial Justice Program, UTEP, and the Interfaith Alliance, so that we can broaden our outreach for facilitators and for participants. So our facilitators are primarily from those organizations, but also community leaders as well, and just, you know, regular people. So you'll see a very wide variety of representation there as far as facilitators go. And we have been very fortunate that we've been approached by many different people who heard about this event or went to our last one and want to be part of this one. And we're always looking for more. We want to keep broadening this. We want this to be an event that continues and that reaches wider and wider demographics. So that's something we're always trying to expand as well. And we think that we've got a pretty good hold on it for this time, for this event, to be as diverse as we can.
As far as the event goes, as you mentioned, there's going to be dinner and then there'll be that conversation. Mm-hmm. What happens towards the end of the dinner? Are some of these conversations taken up and addressed by a keynote speaker or by an MC, or how is this going to work?
It's not at this point. Primarily, the focus is just on that conversation and discussion. We'll ask our tables at the end to reach some kind of conclusion per table on a phrase or a sentence that encapsulates their discussion, which we will then use to help us in our event planning for later on. We also ask each person at the table to leave us a comment, a question they want to see addressed in the future, a conclusion that they reach, somehow that they were impacted. And that's something that we really rely on for future programming, planning, the future dinners that we're going to have, and to get a grasp on what's happening in our community. And some of that is still in the works of what we're going to do with that later on. But that's where it is at this point.
I don't think we've mentioned where it's going to be, but it's going to be at Temple Mount Sion. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, it is free dinner, but reservations are encouraged. And obviously because you want to have a proper head count and so that the seating is available.
Yes, reservations are very, very important. That's a hard thing for us to do, to commit to going to something. I know that that's true, but we are making reservations mandatory so that we can have that head count, so we make sure we have enough food, we have enough facilitators, that's not a problem, that we run out of anything. So we are asking people to please, please RSVP. And it's as simple as sending an email to myself, to contacting the museum. You can call or email, you can go on our website, and there's an RSVP link on that. We're trying to make it as easy as possible to just drop that very quick, yes, I'm coming, or yes, I'm bringing a friend, and that's all that's required.
One of the things that you mentioned, and I think this is, I don't want to say alarming, that's too harsh of a word, but it can be a little bit frightening to some people when you said it's going to be seating lottery style, because even if you don't have seating charts, as we know, as professors here or wherever we go, people tend to always go with the same people. Or sit mm-hmm. at the same place, and you know, you may go to church and someone's sitting in your place, all of a sudden you're like, wait a minute, this person is sitting where I sit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And it really is pushing people out of their comfort zone. It's out of our comfort zone too, to do something like this. And at our first event, we didn't know how that was going to go, to have people not sit with spouses or sit with friends. And a few people were a little hesitant, but by the end, the consensus that we got is that people immediately got to know those at their table. The strangeness feeling of it went away very quickly. That ice got broken right away, and people left very happy with that format, very happy that they were able to talk to people they'd never met before. And one of the reasons we did that is because in our comfort zone, we tend to act a certain way. We tend to say certain things when we're with maybe a spouse, maybe a best friend. And maybe you're a little more uncensored when you're with a group of strangers. Or maybe you feel a little more free to say things that you might not normally say.
So sometimes we may say what the other person wants to hear.
Exactly.
Instead of what we really want to say.
Exactly. And in this format, you might not ever see these people again, but hopefully you do. But I think it led to a lot of very free speech, of people feeling like they could really just open up.
So when people show up to the dinner, do they just give their names and then they're guided to a seat, or how's
yes.
this going to work?
They are asked to check in, and then they are told to draw a table number out of a bowl, and that's their assignment for the evening.
We haven't said what time it's going to start, and then how long is it expected to go?
The doors will open at 5:30, and this is next Thursday. And the actual evening, or the actual dinner and discussion, will start at 6 o'clock. And we expect it to last probably until around 8. That's what we saw last time, and we actually had to wrap up conversations because people just wanted to keep talking to each other, which was a great problem to have.
It's a good thing, I would imagine, that when you're talking about stereotypes and you're trying to break that and you're sitting with people you don't know, the great thing would be that perhaps by the end of the evening, they've made friends and they'll say, you know, we'll get together another time, and all of a sudden, people are out of their comfort zone mm-hmm. and they're realizing that, hey, this person isn't what I thought it's going to be. Because
exactly.
it doesn't matter. Sometimes I'll tell my students where someone walks in the first day of class, they don't know each other, but they tend to stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
This person does this, this person does that.
Absolutely.
And all of a sudden, when it's completely different, they're shocked.
Right. Oh, absolutely. And we fully expect that to happen at this event. We saw it happen at the last one. I think stereotypes are a huge problem that we have because it's easier to generalize about a group of people than to actually get to know them. And that's a scary thing because when we do that, we create this division. We create this us versus them mentality. And that is very prevalent everywhere about all different groups of people. And I think it's human nature to do that. But what we saw at our last event is that many people came in with certain perceptions about other religions or people from other backgrounds, and they left different. They left with a different perspective. And if even one person leaves with a wider view, a changed viewpoint about another person or group of people, then the event is a success.
And we've seen that, unfortunately, in this day and age where, whether it be on social media or anywhere else, you can't have an opinion because if you do and it's against their opinion, all of a sudden you're labeled, you're marked.
Absolutely.
So there's so much anti-Semitism, anti-immigrant, anti-evangelical Christian, anti-Muslim, mm-hmm. anti-whatever.
Anti-everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We've seen so much of that, and I think it's actually increasing, this anti-anything that's different. We've lost the civility of just discourse and conversation. I don't know how it happened. I don't know when it happened. Maybe we've always had that, but we've lost that ability to talk to somebody and hear them disagree with us and it be okay. So that's what we were really excited about with this event and some of the others we have going on at the museum is people feel that in this welcoming space, they can voice a different opinion and no one's going to shout at them for it. No one's going to shoot them down, but maybe they actually will listen and learn from that.
One of the things that people may not understand about whenever they hear about the Holocaust or Holocaust Museum, whether they are believing, you know, what happened or are in denial, there are still some people who stay away because they say, well, I just don't want to see this because it's just horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, history has to be acknowledged.
Absolutely. And I understand it's not an easy history to talk about, to read about. It's not an easy museum to tour because it really explores that depth of man's inhumanity. And that's a really hard thing to deal with. It's easier to ignore that or shut that out because it's coming face to face with real horror and tragedy. But what we try to do at the museum is to show the progression, show how the Holocaust happened, but then to tie it to today as well. And to say, yes, that history is horrific and we cannot change it, but maybe we can actually learn something from it. Maybe we can take that into today and see that when we do have this other mentality, when we do have this us versus them, bias and prejudice and discrimination, they may seem like small issues, but they snowball and they can become much, much larger issues, which I think we're seeing in our country very much today. And that's how the Holocaust began. It began with those small steps of us versus them, and distancing people and isolating people, and then that became the Holocaust. And what we really want people to understand is that type of atrocity, that type of genocide is not inevitable. Those things can be avoided, and it starts with one person doing the right thing or one person opening up their mind and listening to someone else.
There used to be a public service announcement that used to air when I was in undergraduate school, and it talked about prejudice. And they would ask these children what prejudice was, and they all would say, I don't know what prejudice is. And then finally the last little boy says, I think it's when somebody is sick. And then they went out to say, people aren't born with prejudice. They're
exactly.
taught and they learned.
Absolutely.
So share with us a little bit about if a teacher, an educator, decides to take a field trip with their children to the museum, what do you have available for children?
For children at the museum, the guided tour itself is set up in a way to really make the history of the Holocaust come alive for a student. Through our artifacts, through our photographs and films, we try to really give a very personal perspective on the Holocaust and to give them that history, that full understanding of what that history was. So by coming to the museum, a student can really step into that history and grasp it in a very different way than if they had not been to the museum. And we try to make it very accessible for teachers as well. We try to make it very easy for them to schedule a tour. We give them a tour guide, one of our docents who is very knowledgeable and is able to consolidate the history in an hour and a half and give it to their students. So that's what we try to give for teachers as well. We also have resources on our website. We send out resources, education trunks. We have lecture series and teacher conferences for them to give them the resources, because they are the ones who are going to really carry this on.
One of the things that I've noticed from your website also is that you have a free downloadable PowerPoint presentation for teachers.
Yes. Yes, we do. And I'm actually amazed how many teachers use that. I felt PowerPoint was very outdated and we would need to change it. But an amazing number of teachers use that because it's so accessible. It breaks things down into a very tangible way to teach it and to learn it. So that's a resource that we have that's readily available and a free downloadable resource. We also try to have a timeline on our website and historic background, photographs, and we have survivor testimonies from our local survivors, which gives that personal perspective, which is so important when teaching or learning about the Holocaust.
I'm glad you mentioned the survivors because, well, anyone who met Mr. Kellen was just touched by someone who was just incredible. And I was blessed to have known him, and my oldest daughter got to meet him at a coffee shop. But anyway, as far as the survivors, I know that they have a ceremony every year, and that list is getting smaller and smaller every year, but the Shoah celebration, and you meet some of these people, and, you know, they're not bitter. They're willing to just share and say, you know, hate is horrible, and look what it did to me.
Absolutely. Our survivors are incredible, and we have very few of them left here in El Paso, but they have definitely left their legacy here. And the ones that we do have, we celebrate that time with them. And you're right, the way they tell their story, the way they live their lives is such a testament to that amazing ability to survive and to continue with life even after losing so much or losing everything. And many of our survivors were so willing to tell their stories and to share their testimonies. And I can't imagine how hard that must have been, talking about losing your family and your friends and going through such horrors as the concentration camps. But they shared those testimonies, those stories, in order to educate, in order to share that with students. And that's an incredible gift that we've had here in El Paso and continue to have. We still have that.
You mentioned resources earlier, and, you know, what better resource than to read a book? And I love reading, and everyone who knows me knows that I love reading. And there are so many books out there to educate about the Holocaust, from, you know, the youngest person all the way to, you know, an adult. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about, you know, Anne Frank, The German Soldier, The Hiding Place. So many books that, again, children learn about Anne Frank, and then they learn about Anne Frank when she's older and when they're older. And then they also read about incidents, as you mentioned, from survivors who have written books.
Absolutely.
You have a gift shop?
We do. We do have a gift shop that has resources, books, films for all different age groups. We have a children's section. We have a Spanish section. So we do try to address that as well. We are a fully bilingual museum, so we do try to have resources in Spanish as well. And we're just trying to get resources out to as many people as we can. The number of titles written on the Holocaust is vast. It is I don't even know the number. So you just can't go wrong, though, learning about the Holocaust through a survivor's testimony or memoir or a historical book as well.
Jimmy, for people who may never have gone to the museum and they may wonder about admission is free, but donations are accepted. But you also have an opportunity for membership, people who want to join. If you could break it down for us a little bit.
Absolutely. Membership is very important to us at the museum. One of the ways that we stay open, we don't charge for any of our programs, for any of our resources, because we want it to be accessible to everyone. But membership and donations, that's really how we keep our doors open and continue operating in the way that we do. And membership is an easy thing to attain. We have several different levels. If you are a student, there's a level for that, an educator, a family, the list goes on and on. So we try to give amounts that are very easy to do for any individual or for any family. And with those memberships, you not only receive our newsletters, our information about events, you're invited to members-only events like exhibit openings. You get the first sneak peek at an exhibit opening, things along those lines. But I think the biggest thing that you receive is the knowledge that you are helping keep our doors open and you are helping educate the community about the Holocaust. And I think there's no real price you can put on that. At least in our opinion, there's no price you can put on education.
The website, your website, has so many links that can tell about something that we've been talking about. And you talk about events. And are there some other events that you want to share before we talk about the upcoming event on Thursday?
I would love to. We do have another event coming up very soon, and it is on March 22nd, and it is at the museum at 6 o'clock. And it is an event called Speak Out, which is a new series that we've started. And the theme for that is racism, perception versus reality. And we will be having a discussion with a main speaker and a few panelists, as well as involving our participants who come to the event in a discussion on racism. What does it look like here in El Paso? What are the larger national and historic contexts? We'll talk about that, but we really want to talk about what's going on here in our community. It's not an issue that is an easy thing to talk about either. We'll see what comes out of it, but we just want to give an opportunity for people to talk about something that's very fresh in everyone's mind because of what's going on around our country.
And you said this is going to be at the museum?
Yes, it's at the museum. It's another free event. Anyone is welcome, and you can bring friends, family. We'd love to have you join us.
As we wrap up the program, if you wouldn't mind telling us again about the event on Thursday.
Yes. So it is on Thursday, March 1st. It's at 6 o'clock is when the actual event will begin. It's at Temple Mount Sinai, which is on Stanton Street. It's called Community Encounters No Ordinary Words, and it will focus on stereotypes, labeling, names that we use, and the power and impact of those words.
So as far as this event, you said they could email RSVP by calling you, and that is, do you have the phone number for that?
Yes, it's 915-351-0048. There's also information on this on our website, which is ElPasoHolocaustMuseum.org, and you can find out more information on the event as well as RSVP through the website.
And as far as the museum itself, what are the hours?
We are open Tuesday through Sunday. Tuesday through Friday, we're open from 9 to 5. Saturdays and Sundays, we're open 1 to 5. And we are closed on Mondays.
And if a teacher or somebody wants to bring a group, they should call ahead, right?
Yes, we do ask teachers or any person who wants to schedule a guided tour to reserve their spot ahead of time, at least a week's notice. You can do that by just calling the museum, or there's forms that you can fill out on our website and submit those forms for your requested day and time for your tour.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We've been visiting with Jamie Flores. Jamie is a program and education director for the El Paso Holocaust Museum and Study Center. And she's been talking about an event coming up, Community Encounters, No Ordinary Words. That'll take place on Thursday, March 1st. Doors open at 5:30. Dinner is at 6 o'clock. And dinner is free, but you are encouraged to call and make reservations because limited seating, of course. And Jamie mentioned you can go onto their website and reserve your spot or call 351-0048. That number again is 351-0048. Again, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Lauren Terrazas. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Luis Sainz.